You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Hi, I'm Holly Randall, and welcome to my podcast, Holly Randall Unfiltered. This is a show about sex, the adult industry, and the people in it. I'm a 21-year veteran of this fascinating little industry, and as the eldest child of the trailblazing erotic photographer Suze Randall, you could say I grew up in it. So forget everything you think you know about porn, because this show is going to change your mind. My guests are some of the biggest names in the industry, and we unabashedly reveal the real behind-the-scenes stories. The funny, the inspiring, the tragic, and the bizarre. Everyone has an opinion about sex work, but few people actually listen to the sex workers. So sit back and prepare yourself for a podcast which is honest, raw, and unfiltered. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Holly Randall Unfiltered. Today, my guest is a journalist, content creator, and advocate who has worked on so many projects to destigmatize sex work. She was a longtime anchor on Naked News. That's how I had the fortune of meeting her the first time. And she now hosts a YouTube series, Red Umbrella Talk, filmed at New York's Museum of Sex. Welcome, Laura Desiree.
Hello, hello, hello. What an honor. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. No, it's such a pleasure to see you. And it's so funny because the roles are reversed now. I'm interviewing you. Yeah. I am clothed. Yeah. You are clothed.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so different than our first experience
it's
together.
It's a brave new world. But this is a thrill for me. It really is. I've been such a fan since my first knowledge of you. So this is a big one for me today.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Thanks.
It always feels like... I don't know. It's always surprising to me that people...
Oh, Holly, come on.
No, I'm not even kidding. I'm not... Like, it still is weird to me that, like, I still don't think anybody listens to my show.
Come on. It's an institution with... Not just within the industry, but anyone looking for a little insight into what these lives are like.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
No, it's done much better than I ever expected, and I'm super grateful. But you know how it is. Like, you just... I don't know.
Well, thank you for keeping at it is what I'll say.
Thank you.
Because in today's temporary podcast experiences, mm-hmm. it's like someone gets into it. It maybe goes a season. It maybe goes two seasons. Mm-hmm. And then it, you know, we close it. I have a lot of experience with that. So having this continue is powerful.
Thank you. This is actually episode 301.
No way.
By the way. Yep. My 300th episode was...
Gerard Butler.
Oh, no. This is 302.
302.
Sorry. Yes, because I'm skipping ahead because I record episodes and then I release them later. This is 302.
Amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
So, yeah, I know it's crazy that it's gone on this long and I didn't expect it to. But, you know, I don't know. There's so many interesting people to talk to, like yourself. Mm.
I've noticed over the few, I guess, weeks and months, I've seen you start to talk to experts, educators, people outside of just the performance aspect of the industry?
You know, I've always done that.
Okay.
I actually started off like I really wanted to diversify. Mm. If you watch some of my first episodes, actually our mutual friend Derek Brown was one of my first interviews.
Yeah.
He's like not in sex work at all, but he writes like sexy poetry. So I was like, that's close enough to sex. I'm like, come on. And, you know, and he's really fun and stuff like that. I actually love the sex educators. And I find that those episodes are so interesting, but it sucks because they don't do as well nearly at all. People like always want like the big name porn stars.
Of course.
And some of my favorite episodes that I think are the best ones are the ones that like don't get the views that they deserve.
Yeah, but you keep doing that.
And I'm always like, come on, people, like this is good material.
I think we're in... What our generation's revolution is when it comes to like sexuality is this is a social sex revolution, you know, because we look at our parents or grandparents and they had the pill and they had the free sex movements. But this is like about talking about sex in a really brave and honest way. And that's what I think this is. And so you are actually contributing to that as in a leadership role in the social sex revolution to keep these conversations going and to bring these stories out. So, like, that's profound.
Wow, thank
you. Yeah.
I'm really thrilled that the first 5 minutes of this episode is about me.
You're welcome.
So enough about me. About you. So, I mean, we have so much to cover. You've done so much. But I guess let's start at the beginning.
Sure.
So how did you get into the adult industry?
Yeah. I left film school in New York City. I graduated at like 19 or 20 maybe. It was a two-year program. And I wanted to get into independent filmmaking. Mm-hmm. But I also loved nightlife. And I ended up climbing on a lot of bar tops and becoming a go-go dancer and eventually got the shoulder tap that lured me into burlesque. So then there was the striptease element. And I did that for years. I still dabble in it a little bit, but I loved the experience of revealing myself and seducing for the masses, or sometimes for an audience of two, three, or five.
But, yeah.
So I found a lot of power in that, and I felt so excited to be in that state of autonomy and sensual erotic expression. So it was very natural to continue exploring it. Obviously, my burlesque days was well before independent content creators. So I ventured into some more sensual styled performances, more art performances that weren't necessarily traditional burlesque. I ran a very edgy cabaret in Toronto that was called Candyland. And I got poked by a show called Naked News. And they said, hey, we know you do burlesque. It would be a really cool episode if you joined our show and taught the other anchors on our cast a burlesque routine. So I went in, and sure enough, I taught them everything I knew, the glove peel, the seduction of the stocking coming down, and the slow undressing rhythmically and with that enchanting touch. And they said, well, my goodness, can you read a teleprompter? There's something about you that's really exciting. And I did. And then I got into reading the news naked on a green screen and did it for 7 years.
And how was that? I mean, so had you heard of Naked News before they hit you up? Okay. And what did you think of, like, you know, the whole idea of just, like, naked women reading the news?
I remember this show. I remember Naked News has been – it's kind of a legacy web series. I mean, it's been going for over 20 years. It was on Playboy TV for a long time. It was in a bunch of hotel rooms in Europe. I'm pretty sure it had a channel in Asia. I always remember hearing about Naked News. And in Toronto, because you can legally be topless on the street, they would do a lot of filming on the streets of Toronto. I remember in my youth encountering, you know, maybe once in a blue moon, a topless woman standing with a camera pointed at her, holding a microphone, either interviewing other people on the street or just reading something direct to the camera. I knew of Naked News. It got lost in my mind over the years. But the minute that someone dropped me that email and said, do you want to come into the fold of Naked News? I thought, oh my God, yeah, this is kind of harmonious. I've known about this for so long. I didn't know they were still going. I didn't know it was still a thing. I didn't really know what the show was about. And I learned all of that very quickly. It was exciting. I just threw myself into it.
Yeah. Do you find that, like, the news topics that they choose to cover, do they tend to not be terribly serious because people are naked? I just imagine, like, somebody naked, like, delivering, like, you know, news about, like, the war in Ukraine. Like, it just, you know what I mean?
Well,
did you find that they, like, kind of chose certain stories? Okay.
Of course. Our modern world has so much heartbreaking news.
Yeah.
So many stories that are just, you can't avoid them, and they're intensely tragic. It seems that war and misfortune is striking across the globe. Not to be a negative Nancy here, not to be a dark rain cloud, but the idea of Naked News is that the audience, the viewers, very likely have their dick in their hand. We don't want to interfere with that. We don't do stories about mass death.
Yeah.
There weren't stories about any of the unbelievable crimes and mass shootings or anything with minors. Would never touch that.
Yeah.
Would never touch that. So unfortunately, sometimes it was about a new Burger King fusion sandwich, you know?
That, you know what, though? Like, yeah. That's kind of nice because especially, you know, the news channels today, they just feed off a cycle of fear because that's what sells. Yeah. The two things that sell the best in society is sex and fear, right? So Naked News has the sex part covered. And then, you know, CNN's got all the death and the crime and the sadness. True. You know, if you want to, like, watch something. You know, my father, like, towards the end of his life when he was, like, kind of mostly bedridden, was just watching, like, CNN just – you know, constant, that 24-hour news cycle. And I'm just like, this is so depressing.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't this just make you depressed?
Yeah.
Like, because it makes you feel like you live in this world that is just fraught with, like, so much horrific things happening, which isn't necessarily untrue. But it's also like, you know, we choose to focus. Like, what do you choose to focus on, you know?
Well,
do you choose to feed yourself all this constant negative? Or do you choose to, like, watch Naked News and, like, watch a hot chick talk about the latest Burger King fusion sandwich.
And I love that. And I love that. And that's why, to me, I was like, this brings joy to people's lives, you know?
Yes.
I mean, during the pandemic, especially, like, what you're saying about how much of that information we receive of our troubled world, what it can do for us. My goodness, I felt that. And I reached my limit. Mm-hmm. Remember, there were those days where you just have the TV on being like, how far is this insanity going to go with this pandemic? And I reached a limit and said, I need a break.
Yeah.
You know, then I started watching my own clips on Naked News.
And then, like, you felt so much better.
Yeah, I felt so much better.
So what was your first day on Naked News like? Like, did it feel weird standing there delivering the news? Like, I mean, I know you did burlesque and you did the striptease. I'm assuming you got fully naked in those.
I did. Yeah. When I did more of the shock content performance art, loved being naked. Yeah.
Right. But so did it feel strange to you, like, being in this kind of static environment on a green screen with, like, a, you know what I mean? Like, not actively engaging in this whole dance. Like, did that feel weird?
Exactly it. Not engaging in the dance.
Yeah.
Because on Naked News, you're not really standing in these, you know, structural poses that we do in, say, burlesque, where you can kind of manipulate the silhouette. Mm-hmm. You're standing there blank as, you know, the day you were born. And you're standing there. You're delivering the news in that very upright, in your face, full frontal way that we do. And it felt so awkward because I wanted to hinge my body in certain ways. Mm-hmm. I'm not a curvy girl, right? I'm like a column holding up a building. I'm very I'm a skyscraper.
Yeah.
So I like to usually put a bend in it somewhere to kind of give it a little more swing, maybe down there. And we don't do that on Naked News. You stand straight, stark, and you get fully naked. So that was kind of intimidating.
Yeah.
And then there's when you're on the green screen, when you leave the segment, there's the turn and the walk away. The turn and the walk away. Oh, Mike, that thing terrified me. Because, again, I can't slink away like the Pink Panther is playing. Like, you got to turn and walk away.
I think that you should have made the segments your own and just, like, done a whole dance. Like, so what do you think about the latest hamburger fusion? And then just, like, did this whole thing while they're answering and then just came back and be like, and what else?
You know what? Unfortunately, I wasn't the official producer of the show. So
I didn't make those calls.
I couldn't make those calls entirely. But I did start producing some of my own segments over the years there. And, I had some fun with it. Oh, yeah.
So I remember when you came to interview me. I'm used to being around naked people all the time, like, obviously. But it wasn't weird, but it was, like, interesting to be interviewed by somebody who's naked. Have you ever had an experience where you interviewed someone and they, like, literally couldn't concentrate on the questions that you were asking them? And then, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, all the time. Especially when I would do interviews with the general public, not someone who's been prepped. You know, when we go in and do an interview, if I'm talking to a sexpert or a doctor or another performer, they know what to expect. But there was a segment called Naked in the Streets that we would do. And I still can't believe, how the fuck did I have the bravery to do this? To stand on a street corner, either in New York — we did this in New York and in Toronto, two cities where you can legally be topless — and you're interviewing people as they pass by. You grab them and you ask, hey, can I ask you something? Then you take the top off. Then you deliver the question. It's amazing how disarming it is to people.
And they weren't expecting you to take the top off?
I would always let them know.
Okay.
I would always say to them, this is Naked News. are you ready? I'm going to take my top off. And even when they say, yeah, that's cool. You take your top off and they don't even hear the question. They don't hear the question. They don't know their name. They don't know which way is up or down. The look of fear, shock, total explosive stimulation, all of it in one.
Yeah.
I do love that. It's a fantastic study in just how mortal we are.
Yeah.
You know?
Some of my favorite set, you know, you see those like little clips on the internet and it's someone doing like a news story and there's some weird person in the background who does something to like fuck with the news anchor or whatever. Did you have experience? I mean, you must have had people standing in the back, you know, just like jaw on the floor.
When we would shoot those in the streets, you would get people that would surround in a circle behind the camera guy. They would definitely float in the background and give some like, ooh, or some commentary, some ridiculous cartoonish reaction all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a major distraction. Like, I got to give myself credit. That's a level of focus and professionalism that is truly unmatched by most people in that position.
Yeah. I mean,
my goodness.
Fuck trying to give, like, do interviews in, like, a hurricane with 130 mile per hour winds.
Right.
You try to ask somebody a question naked. Come on, Anderson Cooper.
Right?
You got nothing on her.
Try it sometime.
So you were with Naked News for 7 years?
Yeah.
And what, like, kind of progressed from there?
For 7 years, I mean, when I first joined the show, I had about a few months of just entering in as an anchor, reading scripts that they provided for me, and I had a burning desire to do more.
Mm.
I saw this show. I saw the freedom within the content. I saw, wow, we can talk about sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I'm genuinely interested in. I want to lead some investigations. I have too many ideas. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly idea explosions nonstop. So I said, hey, I've got an idea for this and for that and for that, whether it's a series on how to improve your dirty talk, whether it's spending a week with this naturist resort or this swingers getaway, and I would action it. I did all of the legwork to get, you know, logistics done, locations, all the clearances, all the permissions, all of the production that goes into that, I handled, and I ended up doing a slew of exciting, fabulous adventures for that show. And I'm awfully proud of it. We did some things that I don't think the show ever imagined we'd do, like standing on the red carpet at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big event. That's a very
naked
corporate. I wore a blazer with nothing under it. And when I had my opportunities, I gave a flash to the camera.
Okay. Gotcha.
But, you know, access to events that I don't think they thought we would ever attend.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that challenge.
Mm.
You know, I loved finding ways to pitch our attendance to different conventions, different awards, and find my way in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that negotiation just gets me off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
So 7 years of that, you know, of really riding that high of producing this content and writing my own scripts, building my own investigations, the questions that go into it. And I had a really good relationship with my producer in, you know, was it so much collaboration or me just saying, we're going to do it this way?
Mm-hmm.
I got to do a lot of the things that I wanted. And I'm incredibly grateful for that. It was very empowering.
Right. Yeah. So what made you decide to leave after the 7 years? Had it just run its course?
Yeah, I relocated to New York City 2021. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't lived there in like 9 years. But I wanted to go back. I wanted to feel the reawakening of a city after the destruction of the pandemic. And I wanted to take a chance on myself as an independent. And I did see the limitations within the brand of Naked News.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a negative, mm-hmm. but good branding is tight branding.
Yeah.
And in the case of Naked News, there's certain subject matter that we don't enter into,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the queer experience.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it is the politics around sex work,
mm-hmm.
whether it is the realities of, say, stigma, whether it is far too deep into the taboos of sexual behaviors. Mm-hmm. These are areas that fascinate me, and I want to be able to go into them and present them to an audience without worrying, oh, is this going to rub them the wrong way? Mm-hmm. Ooh, is this going to be a mismatch for everything else this legacy has been built around? Because there were experiences of that where I start interviewing someone and we both reach an emotional level, or maybe we're discussing trauma. Maybe we're discussing some really hard realities about being a sexually experienced person. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't fit the show.
Right.
It didn't fit what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
And these are things that I am so compelled to explore.
Yeah.
So I had to do that.
You know, it's so interesting that you say that, because I remember when I first started this show, I didn't really like know what it was going to be. I was just like, I'm just going to interview people in the adult industry and we'll just see how it goes. And, you know, I figured it would probably be a pretty lighthearted conversation, funny and stuff like that. And then episode, I believe it was number 9, was with August Ames. Mm. And she talked about her issues with depression and suicide and stuff like that. And then, you know, as many of us know, she committed suicide a few months later. And that, like, kind of shifted everything for me, because I remember when we were talking, she was revealing all this stuff about her that I didn't expect and I was not prepared for. And I was just like, in my head, I'm like, wait, does she know that, like, this is like, that we're recording this? You know, does she like want this out there? And I just, you know, just remember being so surprised. And then afterwards I asked her, I said, you know, you revealed like really personal stuff. I'm like, are you sure you want to publish that? And she was like, yes, you know, I do. Like, I want to be open. And I checked in with her, I'm not joking, 3 times. And I was like, are you sure? And then I released the episode, and the response was overwhelming in terms of like the people who really, her story resonated with them because they'd had like similar experiences, or it made them see her as more of a human, you know, because I wasn't sure how it was going to look. And it made me realize that there are people do, you know, I think some people really need to hear other people's trauma to help them touch their own and maybe explore their own and maybe heal from their own. And I didn't see that until I did that episode with her. So that really kind of shifted everything. And I was like, wow, this podcast could actually be about so much more than like, you know, the 10-man orgy that you did, or like the one time that like he accidentally stuck it in your butt. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm so glad. I mean, that's so pivotal.
Yeah. And it was such a tragedy that obviously what happened afterwards, you know, and August was so lovely and I was just devastated. But yeah. And since then it's, you know, it depends on my guest. It's like whatever they want to talk about, whatever they want to be open about. And some people have been incredibly open, and there's been tears, and it's been like, and you know, I never thought I would get that from like a porn podcast. And it's been great.
I know exactly what you've been through when it comes to having that unexpected access to someone. As an interviewer myself, it is, we go into a situation or an appointment, let's say, I'm interviewing so-and-so, and sometimes it's just miraculous what they reveal.
And it makes you realize, like, some people just need someone to talk to about this stuff, you know? And I feel like, especially these days with social media and how everything's so distracting, like, one of the things that I love about doing a podcast, and I'm sure you can, you know, obviously relate because you do the same thing, is how often do you sit down with somebody with no other distractions, no phone, no nothing, and talk to them for like an hour?
I can't be on my phone. You're telling me I can't just sit here and be on my phone right now, Holly? I agree. I really do. It's sacred, and it's becoming more rare in our modern world to sit and actually do this. And, you know, when you do have someone that cares to share, feels comfortable enough to share something that deep, something that precious, as painful as it is, as precious as it is, it grants permission to others who hear it to maybe even just in their own private moment go there and address what they're feeling, address what they've been through. That's why it's important to do this.
Yeah.
Right? It's important to keep hosting these conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been really amazing. Mm.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
We all know Adam and Eve is the one-stop shop for everything sexy. And now, with my code HOLLY, you can get any one item for 50% off, plus 10 free gifts. And you'll even get free shipping. So spice up your sex life at adamandeve.com, but only if you use code HOLLY.
Okay, so Laura, let's talk a little bit about you, your upbringing, your family life. Does your family know what you're doing? You have a twin too, right? Yeah. An identical twin, yes. Which is amazing. I think I told you this before because like identical twins are super rare, right? But like hot identical twins are, I feel like, so rare. I just find identical twins fascinating.
You know what? It is a fascinating life. Identical twins, it's a curse and a blessing. The psychological torment that we can inflict upon each other in just a glance is unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously we use our powers for good. We try and support each other, but like this shit's real. And over the years, it's been a really funny ride because I've always been so exhibitionist and so proud to be naked and free about my sensuality. And, you know, I remember her early days of, say, dating someone. I would say, I'm going to do a burlesque show tonight. You guys should come out. Well, he and I haven't done that yet. So I don't know if I want him getting the full visual of you because it's actually me before I've had the chance
to
do it.
Of course. He's like, I really want to see this girl naked.
Right.
I can just go see her twin do burlesque and then I know what I'm getting into.
Right. And so I had to respect that. I'm like, you know what? I totally get that. So and it's true because our bodies are identical.
Yeah.
It's crazy, identical twins. But it's been wonderful. My family knows what I do. My father is a huge supporter, especially when I, you know, take a leadership role in any project I'm doing. Mm-hmm. He's very proud. Mm-hmm. I am so lucky to come from a non-judgmental upbringing. Mm. We were extremely tight growing up. My father raised my sister and I. I lost my mother when I was 10, but this was after a 5-year battle with really vicious cancer that pretty much limited her to living in hospitals. So I grew up in a lot of hospitals, and being around that much strain and stress and, you know, adults leaning into your face saying, you're so strong, you're so strong, you're so mm-hmm. strong. There wasn't really an opportunity to be anything but strong mm-hmm. and invincible. And it's been a journey of my own over the years to be compassionate towards myself mm-hmm. about grief and about emotions. And, you know, they used to come to me in outbursts when I was little.
Yeah.
I would have explosions, temper tantrums, on the floor, kicking, screaming.
Yeah. Because as a child, you don't know how to process that grief.
No, at all. And it compounds
in
so many different ways. Just the reality, the terror. Is this really happening? Am I losing a parent? Mm-hmm. And to this day, I'm still trying to find the way to really honor my father. Because my goodness, I crumble to the most ridiculous shit these days. Like, I have to do 5 things in a day. This man had 2 10-year-old daughters who were approaching 6 feet tall by 11 and a full career in radio. And he stood by. He stuck around. He dedicated his life to raising us with culture, with appreciation for art, with pride in ourselves, with a comfort about some of the darker aspects of reality. I mean, we watched so many movies, you know, things that I don't know if I was old enough to watch at the time, but we would talk about them afterwards. Mm-hmm. And that's where my love of investigation and journalism and opinion came from, because we would talk about them. We didn't really talk about the grief. We didn't really talk about.
He was probably just trying to keep you like distracted and giving you a childhood.
We used our critique of movies and music as a way to share the emotions we were feeling.
Right.
So we would watch a movie, and I forever have this memory. We watched The English Patient. And
uplifting.
So uplifting.
It's such a feel-good movie.
I just remember my dad breaking down, losing it.
Yeah.
And we paused the movie, and my sister and I were like, "Dad, what are you doing?" And he said, "Well, I have to be mom and dad, so I'm allowed to cry."
Yeah.
And, you know, those were the opportunities we had to be emotional, was in sharing movies.
Yeah.
It was less confrontational than sitting down, staring at each other and saying, "Are you okay? Are you okay? What's grief feel like in you today?" We did it through movies.
Yeah.
And it's an education that I'm very lucky to have because, my God, pop culture references.
Mm-hmm.
That shit's the basis of comedy, connection, and pure magic.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that also like what art is there for as well, you know, to – that's how we like share our collective human experience.
Totally.
And those –
totally.
Yeah, and those, you know, those pieces, especially if they reflect like a part of your life.
Yeah. It's important to – interact with art in that way.
Yeah.
So like I would love to someday sing his praises and really, like, I don't even know how to put the words to it, but I'm just like, man, that's a powerful legacy that you raised us through that shit. You held it together. You still had a phenomenal career in radio, and it's a capacity that I'm in awe of. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that is rough. I mean, you know, like I mentioned, I lost my dad 6 months ago, and but I had the fortune to, like, you know, like grow up with him and like spend, you know, I mean, I'm 44, so he lived, you know, for a very large chunk of my life. And I also like was able to process his grief, I think, really well, especially like because I was sober and I'm in the program and I do all this like stuff to like help me process emotions and stuff like that, to the point where actually I started feeling better earlier than I expected. I was kind of like, wait a minute. I almost felt like guilty, you know, because I was able to process it better than like, say, my mom was or something like that. And I almost felt bad about that.
Right.
But then also, you know, grief like comes in waves, as people say. And I'm finally – we're clearing out his room, which was the room that he died in. We had to move him downstairs because he couldn't get up the stairs because of his Parkinson's. And I'm finally clearing it out and redecorating it. And that took a toll on my mental health. I was not expecting. Like, the last 3 days have been, like, very hard for me. Do you still, like, have those moments with your mom's passing?
Yeah. I work once a week with a therapist, and I'm trying more than ever to welcome them, to welcome them.
Yeah.
Before we move past it, you said something about feeling a guilt for the resilience or the bounce back from it. You also got to take into account you yourself overcame and entered sobriety. You yourself are a mother. And I know that shit is fucking wild. I know that ride takes a hell of a lot of strength. So you might already have some muscle in the body and the emotional parts of yourself that need that to process. So my God, bravo. And it's a long game, right? So like even me today, of course, I still have meltdown days where, I mean, it's not violent, but it's low. I'm like a low vibration day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a difficult thing to share with, say, a partner in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because the minute that you express to someone, hey, I deal with grief.
Mm-hmm.
I deal with trauma.
Mm-hmm.
I deal with this experience that happened to me. Everyone, especially if they are a partner or a romantic person in your life, they want to say, well, how do I take that away from you immediately?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the expect. That's not the job. The job is to be present with me or the person and just say, hey, you're not alone in this.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm here with you presently. Just as a physical being, you can say whatever you want. You can behave however you want. I'm here with you right now in this.
Yeah.
Because that's what's missing in that moment, right?
Yeah.
It's very isolating grief.
Yeah. Yeah. And I lock myself in the bathroom a lot.
Yeah. It's unlike anything else. My God.
Yeah.
It's a long journey, but I try and remember her. My mother was so incredible. I mean, listen, this woman was a community leader in our neighborhood. This woman she could rebuild furniture from nothing. She could cook everything in the world. She could sing and perform and just a remarkable woman. My God, before she went into complete palliative care, and she was still coherent enough, she cooked us a year's worth of food, and we froze it in the basement.
Wow.
And I remember when we reached that last bag of her spaghetti sauce as a family, and we thought, it's the last time we're going to taste mom's cooking.
Oh, man. I was going to ask, like, what that last meal was like.
Yeah. It was eaten very slow. And we're a family that eats like, you know, horses with a feed bag on. But it was done ceremoniously. And then, of course, the next day it was like, we got to learn how to make spaghetti sauce now because no one else could cook. My dad was always taking us to, you know, a drive-through or the food court at the mall.
Yeah.
We instantly stepped up to the plate in that moment.
That's incredible. I mean, what an act of love and service. I mean, that's remarkable. Your mom knew she was dying.
Yeah.
So her first thought was, what can I do to take care of my family when I'm gone?
Yeah.
Let me prepare a year's worth of food. That's nuts.
I know. It's incredible.
Wow.
What a woman.
Ooh. Oh, my gosh. Okay, let's talk about porn. Please. Dicks.
Yeah.
Let's clean this palate with a little bit of dick talk.
I love it.
I always do this whenever it gets too heavy. What's the perfect penis size for you?
I would say around 6.5-7.
Okay.
6.5-7 inches.
It's a little bigger than average, but that's okay. It's okay. You are entitled to like the dick that you like.
Yeah, I say something to aspire to, everyone. I would say that's my perfect. Mm-hmm. But I'm also not one of those people that's like, oh, that dick's gonna do nothing for me. Like, it's about so much more to me. Like, honestly, I can reach climax before I've even been penetrated. Mm-hmm. Just like you can work it up psychologically, you can work me up by interacting with my neck. This is the gateway right here. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, same back of the neck and back of the shoulders for me.
I know. What
is
that?
My back
is
just, it's a crazy erogenous zone.
Like, what is that? It's so strong in me.
I think it's like, you know, there's a lot of nerves there. Your skin is thin. And people generally don't touch you there. It's an intimate place to touch you, right?
It's very animal, too.
Mm, yeah.
I just like knowing that, like, ooh, if you bite too hard, you could just kill me right now.
Yeah.
You know? Like, there's something ridiculous.
I mean, when you see, like, lion's mate, the guy's always, like, biting the neck of the female.
Exactly. So that, to me, like, all that plays in my head. And I get really hot on it. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think that men are generally doing wrong in the bedroom?
Rushing themselves, making changes to the moments we declare I'm feeling pleasure, you know, be it I'm about to come. Why is this instinct to then intensify whatever it is that you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Just stay on track.
Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many women have literally said exactly
that.
They're like, don't change it.
Like,
you're clearly getting me there.
Yeah.
So don't like,
Also not building up a vocabulary for their own expressions of pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
This may sound so pretentious, but articulation is a fucking huge turn on, for me especially.
Mm-hmm.
And I know everyone's trying to please me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that having a vocabulary around what it is you enjoy and maybe what it is that you desire to experience with someone else can actually intensify an encounter.
Okay.
Communicating that. Because the mystery is great. The mystery of I don't know what's going on is fun, but it can also be really limiting of like, I don't know if you're enjoying this. I don't know if this is successful. I don't know if we're getting anywhere. Like, that can actually be an inhibitor to dropping into that erotic trance of the two of you being locked into it or the five of you being locked into it. So like, communication, I know it's such a basic, but like, I urge you to build up a vocabulary around the sensations that you love, the desires that you have, with detail. It's not just that you want your ass smacked Think about the grip that you want on it after. Mm. Think about, you know, the vibration you want to feel through the skin after. Like, think about the temperature. Think about all these things and start speaking them. Mm-hmm. That's how you really connect with someone on a very deep level, at least in my experience. I can only speak of my experience.
And so this is probably what led you to feel like you wanted to do pieces on like how to dirty talk, because I think a lot of people don't know how to do it. They're embarrassed to do it. Mm. I mean, you know, we talk so much about communication, and it's kind of a given in our industry, right? Because like we have to communicate what's going to happen in the scene, because we're creating a product and the two people may not know each other, and you know, we want to make sure no one's crossing boundaries or anything like that. But I think in people's intimate lives, it feels, you know, strange and takes the magic out of it to like talk about what you're going to do. And, you know, like we were sold this idea that in movies and when people magically come together, like there's just this unspoken communication and everything's perfect.
Of course.
But it's just not generally that way.
I'm gonna put so many bridges together right now. You ready? I'm ready. I'm building so many bridges. Why am I so passionate about this sacred space of sexuality? So I just told you a little bit about growing up in trauma and what it takes to survive that and to endure that, being told that I'm strong and having to uphold that. Mm-hmm. My entire life I've been looking for a place to be completely authentic, potentially ugly, potentially a mess, entirely genuine in my being. And sex has been that for me. Mm. Sex has always been that. It's the one arena in life where I can have those honest meltdowns. I can contort in the ways that my natural self wants to. It's why I value sex so greatly. It's why I find it healing. It's why it is every bit necessary for me. It's also why I don't want to do porn completely.
Hmm. Okay. Explain that.
Because I fear, in all of my desire to, and my passion to present, and to be a professional, I fear that I may, in some way, threaten that experience of sex being the place where I can unleash and I can be whatever it is. I don't want anything to tarnish that space for me.
Mm. So it's like if you take that, so what I think you're saying is that sex is this very free place where you get to be expressive about who you are, and it's very intimate for you. And if you turn that into a job, it changes everything about it for you.
I mean, I'm a performer.
Yeah.
I'm a performer. And this only applies to me. I know how many amazing porn performers there are that bring their complete authenticity to it. Mm-hmm. And I fucking commend them wholeheartedly. It's amazing. Not everyone does it. Some people really rely on that dialed in performance. Mm-hmm. And that's fine too. Mm-hmm. You know, that's totally whatever gets the job done.
Yeah.
But for myself, I have not found an opportunity in life. Now, in my older years, I have through, you know, honest conversations. But, you know, in my late teens, early 20s, sex was the first place I was able to completely be myself and to be maybe not okay, or to be a mess, or to not be this composed, polished person that I had to be my whole upbringing. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm like, if I got into porn performing, I wonder if I would care too much about it being a good performance and losing that ability to really surrender to it.
I think as a performer, yeah. I feel it's very likely.
Yeah.
And that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? Maybe I would share my authenticity and it would just be a whole fucking game changer.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rest is history. Who knows? But for me, that's a very sacred thing.
You know, I also feel that sometimes it's unfair that we demand that people tell us why they would do porn or why they wouldn't do porn. Mm. It's like, does everybody really need to explain themselves? And it's funny because I have people on the show literally to explain themselves. Why are you in porn? Why are you not in porn? But, you know, sometimes I just see from the comments that people leave and, you know, porn fans are like, why would you do this? You know, like why, you know, your parents must be so proud and why would you throw away an opportunity to go to college to be a porn star, blah, 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 blah. You know, you see a lot of that judgment. And then you also see people like, I get this a lot, like, why won't you do porn? And I'm like, because I don't want to. They're like, but why? Like, every you work in porn, you work behind the camera, you like shoot all these women who do porn, like you should do it too. And I'm just like, literally, and I get to ask this question all the time, especially on my OnlyFans, and I'm just like, because I don't, you know, obviously, like, I'm not ashamed of it. Obviously, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I just don't want to. I don't even like watching myself have sex in the mirror. I definitely don't want to be on camera. Like, I just don't want to. Why do I have to explain why I don't want to? I just don't want to.
I make some ugly fucking sounds on my way to climax. I make some weird faces. I make some weird decisions in those moments. And if I had a wonderful equipped crew that's looking out for the best shot or the best moment, I just don't want that voice in my head that's saying, that's not sexy. Because you know what? To me, it is. Yeah. And so I need to defend that. And I'm going to defend that and say, you know what? I won't be doing full-fledged porn, everyone. I love finding ways to seduce you. I love finding ways to conjure arousal. I do a lot of it on my OnlyFans. I do a lot of it on my Tempted. But when it comes to actually sharing me fucking, no, I'm going to hold on to that.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep that for me. It's not what you expect, everyone.
But why?
But why? We want that sound, that gorilla grunt that you make, Laura. We want that. You probably do. Think about it.
All right. So moving on to what you will do, which is producing a YouTube series called Red Umbrella Talk.
Yes.
I remember when I saw this come out, I was really intrigued. And I mean, I think that you're sparking conversations that are so important, especially now. I mean, I remember, you know, I've been in this industry a long time, and sex work is like a new term. This was not around 20 years ago. And I love it because it's this term that encompasses so many different things. It's the porn star. It's the content creator. It's the, you know, escort. It's the prostitute. It's the whatever. It's all those things, because it used to be like, oh, you're a porn star or you're a hooker. And like, porn stars wouldn't work with hookers because they're dirty. I mean, it was literally like throwing rocks from glass houses. Like, the industry, a lot of industry infighting and a lot of what we call horiarchy.
Horiarchy.
It's horiarchy is how it's spelled.
Oh, I was doing H-O-E, ho-archy.
But you've heard the term
horarchy.
Horarchy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's horarchy, right?
Yeah, horarchy.
It's not horiarchy.
Horarchy. Just say it with the confidence, right? Horarchy.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
Anyways, however, because it's not a real word. It's. I mean, it is, but it's one we made up as an industry. So I don't know. I can't find it in the fucking dictionary and find the proper pronunciation. But anyways, and so I love that, like, sex work kind of, you know, eliminates all of that. At least the idea around the term is that, like, we're all equals who engage in sex in some way for work. So, yeah, tell me about how you came up with this idea, the guests you've interviewed, what you've learned from it, all of that.
So, Red Umbrella Talk, over my years of being so excited about the work I've done in the adult industry, interviewing the folks that I have, observing and participating in the industry in the ways that I have, extreme pride, extreme thrill, extreme excitement to tell other people what this has been like and what I'm learning and how I'm enjoying it and how incredible that person is and how fucking inspiring that person is. And I bridge both, okay? I bridge the adult industry, and I'm also, I have a lot of connections in mainstream, be it some of the work that I do every once in a while, be it my social circle. Every time I would bring a little piece of thrill or a story to my mainstream conservative non-sex work circles, every once in a while I would be met with the opinion of some bullshit misconception. Well, how can you say that? Don't they come from grand misery? Can't someone help these people? My God, isn't everyone in that industry
sex trafficked?
Sex trafficked or suffering or dealing with some kind of addiction? I got so sick of this shit because it's 2023. And I realized all of their information, all of their opinions are informed from a really unfortunate source called mass media depictions of sex work, mm-hmm. which is fabricated. Mm-hmm. It is falsified. It is made extreme in these mutated, bloated versions of what they think sex work is for dramatic effect. This is not the reality of it. And I would try. I would get into these heated debates and say, no, you don't understand. You really need to educate yourself. You really need to talk with these folks. You really need to read this or learn that. And I said, you know what? I want to take all these questions. I want to take the questions from the general public, and I want to bring them right to the workers doing these jobs. So Red Umbrella Talk is 5 episodes. It's an episode dedicated to what I would say are the general components within sex work, okay, the professions within it. You've got porn performing, pornography. You've got escorting, full-service sex work. You've got professional domination. You've got stripping, exotic dancing, nightclub work. And then you've got an episode that's dedicated to the legalities, mm-hmm. which are so fucking complex in this country especially. So I sat with 2 lawyers that work within First Amendment rights. So we're talking a lot about censorship, freedom of speech, and all the FOSTA, SESTA bullshit that really fucked up the industry, mm-hmm. Made it very dangerous for a lot of workers. So I spent a long time gathering questions from friends, of course. I had an open email inbox for people on my social media that wanted to send me questions for one of these professions or sex work in general. And then I prodded people specifically. I said, I want a mental health professional to submit a question. I want a medical professional to submit a question. I want a legal professional to submit a question. I want someone in law enforcement to submit a question. And then I asked some family members. I brought all of these questions together and I sifted them into what episode would make the most sense. And these are what these episodes are. Mm-hmm. So it's conversations where we basically present these questions from the misinformed general public direct to the workers themselves. And it was an incredible project to be in pre-production and production with, and of course, post. Funding this, thank God for the good people at Motor Bunny. They came in with a huge amount of the funding to make this possible. They believed in this project from the jump. I, of course, did a huge crowdfunding effort and saw so much support from people that do believe in the mission, mm-hmm. and are supporters of me, which is great. And was this was something that, of course, I shared producing with my dear friend Ellen Stagg. Mm-hmm. So Ellen and I came together and really busted our asses to make this thing happen. And the Museum of Sex was so kind to give us a venue, a very illustrious one to host this at.
Yeah, it looks very professional looking.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks great.
It was incredible to be able to do that with them.
Do you have – this is probably an unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Do you have a favorite episode?
Yeah, I do. Professional domination.
Okay.
I that facet of sex work in particular really I just love how deep the psychology goes. I mean, they all have deep psychology to them where we're investigating what makes humans tick and just how natural the pursuit of pleasure is. But – it's the confrontation of what some specific requests and experiences are, and maybe the understanding of why we as a society deem this work so taboo, what the healing element is within it, how people do process trauma through these experiences with professional dominatrixes or dominatrixes. That shit blows my mind.
Yeah.
It blows my mind. I mean, it's so vast. The reasons why we seek out, whether it's a surrender of power or whether it's actual full-blown pain, mm-hmm. or a denial of sorts. My God, I could talk about that shit for the rest of my life.
What do you find to be like the most interesting kink that people have?
Oh, that is such a tough one. The most interesting kink. The ones perhaps where people are looking to relive a trauma they've experienced. Mm. Whether or not they want to play the part of themselves reliving it again. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they want to play the part of the person who perhaps affected them
mm-hmm.
in a traumatic way.
Yeah.
That to me is a very powerful exchange. And to seek that out, we run from trauma.
Yeah.
We run from the shit that has scarred us and scared us. So the idea of wanting to hire a professional to lead you back into it, to confront it head on,
mm-hmm.
that shit is wild.
But in
fascinating.
It is, but also in a space where you're safe
mm-hmm.
and you have control. I mean, because yeah. obviously as long as you're working with a professional mm-hmm. who understands boundaries mm-hmm. and you have safe words and all those kinds of things. I've talked to a lot of women who have, you know, done exactly that, you know, kind of relived their trauma mm-hmm. in a safe space with someone that they trusted where they knew that they could actually end it because
yeah.
the initial trauma, they had no control.
That's right.
And that was what, you know, created the fear. And so reliving it without that is healing for them. And
yeah.
that sounds counterintuitive, I think, to a lot of people. But when you hear people break it down and explain why it's helpful, like, you know, yeah. it starts to make sense.
To our core, what makes us the most unique is our sexual preferences, our sexual triggers that stir about an arousal mm-hmm. within us. And I think if you can find healing through accepting yourself as a sexual person, as a sensual person, if you can embrace that, there's such an incredible world and life of understanding that you get to reap the rewards of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's for me. That it's and not every professional in the world of pro dom spheres, not everyone caters to that specifically.
Yeah.
There are people that say, yes, I will do confrontational trauma reenactment. Not everyone does it, yeah. but those ones really blow my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're really being entrusted with something incredibly sacred and important. I mean, that's a lot of responsibility on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's remarkable. So what is the biggest misconception that you find people have about those in sex work from your experience with this podcast?
That professionals in sex work don't feel proud of themselves. That professionals in any facet of sex work have a negative relationship with themselves. That's the biggest misconception. It's an incredible stance of pride in oneself to not just explore this side of themselves, to then share it, to then knowingly pursue it in a society that wants to keep you down. Talk about a fucking strength and resilience.
Mm-hmm.
We're not blind to the stigma that's out there. We are very aware of it. But there's something that compels us to continue exploring this and sharing it. And yes, profiting from it and, you know, making a living this way. But it's because we as humans instinctively have a very severe fascination with sexuality and,
yeah.
and pursuing pleasure. So I think that we are enlightened. I think we are. And I think this whole misconception is the poison that we feed ourselves so that we may not ever have to go on that journey, which is unpredictable. Maybe I'll learn something about my sexuality that I don't know if I can accept. Ooh, maybe I'll learn something about myself that might be different from what I've been telling people. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll learn something that I don't know how I feel about. You got to be a real fucking warrior to go in and do this work.
Yeah.
You got to. And so I say, bravo.
Yeah.
Holy hell.
Yeah. I mean, it is crazy too because, you know, people come in and then they try to leave and get a real job. This is like the thing that frustrates me the most. And they go out and try to get a real job and then they literally like can't get a real job because they did porn at one point, you know? And it's
that.
Just like, it's so infuriating because it's like society views them as sexual deviants,
mm-hmm.
you know, as criminals.
Right.
And it's like, not the case
right.
at all.
No. Society deems them as, you know, someone who lost their way, who has fallen in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I will acknowledge that, yes, there is a population of people in sex work that are, unfortunately, they have found themselves there for some misfortune.
Mm-hmm.
Of course there are.
Yeah.
But there are people that have found themselves working at Wells Fargo hating every fucking moment of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because of some misfortune.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's been handed down by, you know, the family that's been in the business forever, and they mm-hmm. hate it. And mm-hmm. that's a whole kind of torture and struggle in itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people out there who hate their jobs.
Hell yeah.
I mean, the nice thing about about being, especially like an independent content creator, which so many people are now, is because somebody did ask me, like, what is like the best thing about, you know, this work? And I was like, I think it's like the freedom to be able to kind of work when you want to.
Oh, yeah.
Which is so nice. But also it's hard because you don't get to rely on a steady paycheck, like as an employee. You know what I mean? Like, you're only getting the money that you work for.
Yeah, you also got to be your own motivator. Mm-hmm. You also got to be your own hold you to accountability person uh-huh. that says, hey, have you worked this week or not? How about a live stream? Let's get in that inbox. Let's start pushing some content. Yeah. Like, yeah, that shit's annoying.
Yeah, definitely. You recently shot something that you called your entry into the industry with Romy Rain. What can you tell us about that?
So Romy and I are very dear friends. She's, I would say, best friend. I absolutely fucking adore her. And we like to do a lot of content together. We do mm-hmm. live streams together ever since our podcast that we did a few years ago. There's a fan base that loves us doing things together. And hey, guess what? We enjoy it too. So it's very easy to get together and do it. But I always like to find adventurous ways to make sexy content that don't cross my boundary. Mm-hmm. And Romy is so respectful of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she's never like, come on, let's just do a girl-girl scene. She doesn't go there. She knows what my limits are. Yeah. And she fucking respects them. But I'll say to her, I've got a weird idea for something. We should do it. Like, I love spit. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love the variety of spit that you can shoot it out like a bullet from your mouth. It can land and splatter, or you can pull it up like syrupy strings of rope. I love the varieties of spit. And I said to her, you know what I will do? Let's do some spit art. And we made a very spitty duet. I'm going to call it a spit duet.
A spit duet,
spit duet.
Is this a video?
It's a video. And it is beautiful. Oh my God. I mean, the daylight twinkling through the saliva is ridiculous.
I gotta say, like, whenever I shoot stuff like that, like anything involving spit, blowjob, pussy eating, whatever, I'm always like, give me those trails of spit. And if I get beautiful trails of spit with the light behind it, I'm like, oh, look at that. Like, literally to me, like as a photographer, I know that that is gold.
Yeah. Yeah, this is exactly what I wanted. I wanted us to capture. Was I was like, girl, let's make this like a spit worship video. And and she, after we shot that, she goes, this could be your entry if you wanted it to be. This, if you wanted it to be, this could be your entry. I said, yeah, I'll think about it, but no, I'm good. And what was so sweet was that we held that video for a long time, and we got the edit back on it. And my God, what a beautiful stance to take here. Romy checked in with me constantly. Did you watch it? How do you feel about it? Mm-hmm. Is it too much? Because we don't need to do anything with it. And I said, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's weird. It's art. It's like very freaky in a sense. And mm-hmm. I like it. And I said, let's fucking do it. But I like that, you know, I've got a friend that checks in along the way.
Yeah.
Which I think people need in this industry, especially when you start doing collaborative work. You want to walk away from it and have that check-in afterwards. Yes. So.
Yeah. So if people were to check out your work, I'm assuming you have an OnlyFans. Mm-hmm. What kind of content can they get there?
I do a lot of dick ratings.
Mm, dick ratings, my favorite.
Love dick ratings. I do a lot of JOIs in mm-hmm. very different characters. I do a lot
Wait, what do you mean different characters?
Well, sometimes you want it nice and mm-hmm. Stepford Wivesy and you've had a long day. And sometimes you want it really fucking mean. I mean, like sandpaper on the flesh. Mm. So I like having that versatility there. I do a lot of verbal bullying.
For small penis humiliation?
Small penis humiliation, but even more than that, like bullying. I don't know what it is. It might be that I'm 6 feet tall. It mm-hmm. might be that I have a very readily available vocabulary at all times. But my fan base on these platforms, there's a large majority of highly submissive subscribers. Mm. And to them, they really want to be pushed around. And it's fun. I mean, I welcome it. I love it. I'm very good at it. I'm comfortable in that realm. Mm-hmm. And I love that trade-off. Mm-hmm. Seeing just how far they'll debase themselves and just how high and mighty I can get. Why mm-hmm. not?
You know, I've had a couple of people request those from me, and I'm just like, I thought that I'd be really good at being mean to people. And I'm just not that, I'm not that good at it.
Oh, come on.
I know. I feel like I should be great at this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you just maybe gotta I just sit need more. Maybe I just need more practice.
You just gotta sit with it. I've had some incredible chats with fans mm-hmm. about, you know, the things that they want me to do. They fantasize about me doing to them. I want you to remove me entirely from the gene pool. I want you to completely castrate me and make me useless. I want you, like, these are fucking incredible pieces of literature, you know? Like,
it's amazing
it
how,
blows
like,
my mind.
The imagination of these people.
I
right?
love it. And I'm like, this is awesome that you're comfortable in this way and that you've developed this and explored it for yourself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I love that too. And I think that a lot of people respond to that because, you know, so often if they went to a partner or something with those kinky fantasies, they would be shamed and humiliated. But they can pay you to be shamed and humiliated in the way that they want to be.
And let this be a public service announcement here. I do believe, now I'm not a medical professional, but I do believe that unspoken desires become the tumors in our body. Mm. I do believe that. You hold on to that shit for too long, you don't even begin to explore it or look underneath whatever you've blanketed it with. Mm-hmm. The longer you hold on to that shit, it's going to eat you alive.
It also kind of, I've found that, you know, people, when they suppress their sexuality, you see this a lot in like very conservative countries, that it just comes out in other sick and twisted ways.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It finds like the edges and the breaks and the cracks and the mold to like seep out of, and it comes out in a very unhealthy way that damages other people.
It makes us feel powerless when we are unable to acknowledge our desires, yeah. when we are unable to confront them. Yeah. So how else can we feel powerful? In violent outbursts, in cruelty, mm-hmm. in vicious attacks yeah. on our own communities. That's what that is.
Yeah.
That's what I believe it is, wholeheartedly. No, quote me on that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, human sexuality is a powerful driving force. I mean, it's literally like the life force behind our entire existence, right? Like, we are alive because two people had sex with each other.
Right.
So I think that there's a lot to that, that denying that those basic urges is very unhealthy.
We all have a sexuality. Yeah. It's the one thing that's a guarantee. I mean, other than death and taxes, we have a sexuality, even if that sexuality says, I don't want to have sex mm-hmm. or I don't want to receive pleasure in this way or that way or that way. We all have a sexuality, a sexual identity. So you cannot avoid it. Why would you avoid it? You're shuttering off an entire part of your humanity, your existence. It's like, don't go in the West Wing, you know, like, fuck mm-hmm. it. I want to go down there.
Yeah.
And you should.
Yeah.
You should.
It's fucking parties in the West Wing.
Fuck yeah, they are,
crazy
right?
Crazy orgy Woo, parties you've been in the West there. Wing. Well, Laura, thank you so much for coming on. This has been an absolute pleasure. Are you planning on doing a season 2 of Red Umbrella Talk?
Yes. Ellen Stagg and I are going to get to work very soon on season 2. We'd like to explore some of the other areas that we haven't touched on yet. Mm-hmm. The trans experience. We'd like to touch on the actual individuals working in the medical fields that are making help and access to any kind of medical care available to sex workers. We would like to speak to legacy sex workers, people that mm-hmm. have been doing this throughout the eras of their life, that are mm-hmm. reaching those golden years. I think that there's a lot we can still uncover. Yeah. And yeah, we're pulling it together. It's taken a little bit longer than we wanted to, but mm-hmm. As do anything that seems to be worthy.
Yeah, absolutely. Where can people go to submit their questions?
RedUmbrellaTalk.com.
Fantastic.
Yeah, come get it.
And then let everybody else know all the valuable links where they can get more Laura from.
Right here. I want you to be in touch with all things Laura Desiree. So please go to laurauxdesiree.me. You can also find me on social media at laurauxdesiree. Thank you.
Fantastic. And you guys can find me, as always, on Instagram and on Twitter at Holly Randall. Go to hollylinks.com just to get links to all of my various social media platforms. And of course, if you want to support this podcast and access the live streams as they happen, go to patreon.com/hollyrandallunfiltered. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Make sure you drop Laura a follow. Tell her that you found her through this episode so she knows that I did not waste her time. Thanks, guys. See you next time. Thank you so much for listening. Your support means the world to me. A great way to show your love is to rate and review my show. And an easy way to do that is to go to ratethispodcast.com/HRU and you'll be directed to the various podcast apps your device supports and then led to where you can leave your review. And if you can afford to financially support this podcast, you can do so for as little as $5 a month at patreon.com/HollyRandallUnfiltered. This is where you'll get access to the live streams of my interviews, bonus Q&As with my guests, access to my fine art photography and behind the scenes of my shoots, free memberships to my not safe for work website, hollyrandall.com, merchandise such as stickers, mugs, and hoodies, and so much more. You can watch the video versions of these podcasts at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/hollyrandallunfiltered. Join us every Sunday evening for episode premieres where you can chat live with myself and other HRU fans as we watch the newest release together. You can also follow the show on Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. All of my social media links are at hollylinks.com.